Yeah, here's the thing. If you meet somebody in the supermarket and they have a mask on, should you be able to recognise them just from their eyes up? Well, we would have been guessing up until now. But Dr. Ailey Noyes, a senior lecturer in cognitive psychology at the University of Huddersfield, has done some research into facial recognition and the wearing of masks. And she joins us now on the line to tell us more. How are you doing, Ailey?
Hi there. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk to you today.
Yeah, good to talk to you. So your area of expertise is facial recognition. We're good at it as humans.
Exactly.
We're good at it. How good are we?
Well, humans have a remarkable ability to recognise what we call familiar faces. So the faces of your friends, the family, celebrities that you see on the television.
Mm.
And this links back right to an evolutionary advantage. It would make sense for our ancestors to be able to know who their friends are and who they should avoid who might cause them harm. We know that even newborn infants actually prefer to look at patterns that look like a face rather than a scrambled face array. So it seems that we've got an innate preference for faces, and we are really very good at recognising the faces of people we know. So like you said before there, in terms of recognising faces in masks in supermarkets, we've had all this experience of recognising faces without masks, and suddenly masks have become the new normal.
Yeah.
So we wanted to know how would masks affect our ability to recognise both familiar faces and also faces that we're unfamiliar with. For example, in the supermarket scenario, if you've got an identification check, if you're looking at your passport image or someone standing in front of you, is it the same person or not?
Yeah. And why, what benefit would your research have, do you think?
So it's a really kind of very current question.
Yes.
Suddenly face masks are everywhere. How does this affect our ability to recognise faces? So there's the practical component. Are we going to be able to recognise our friends and family?
Yes.
There's the applied component, which is in terms of security scenarios. Would you be able to make comparisons from CCTV footage from masks and non-masked faces? And it also just helps us understand how humans recognize faces. Are they using the mouth region of the face, or is it more in the top region of the face, which is what a lot of previous research has suggested?
Now, of course, there's the other application of it is that people will now know if they can make that excuse anymore. Oh, I didn't recognize you. You walked right past me there in the supermarket. Oh, I didn't recognise you. It must have been the mask.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, yeah, perhaps we're taking the excuse away a little bit.
Yes, yes. So what did you...
I'm sorry. So first of all, a bit of a disclaimer. It does make the task a bit harder if they're in a mask. So it is a bit harder to recognise someone, even if we see them in a face mask, which makes sense. The lower part of the face is covered. But it's no harder to recognise a face in a face mask than a face in sunglasses, which is an occlusion that we're all used to seeing if the face is a familiar face.
So what are we talking about then? What sort of percentage accuracy are we talking about?
So for familiar faces, as I said, these faces that we know well, people usually perform with accuracy of kind of 90, even 100% on some of these tasks.
Right.
In our task, we asked people to compare pairs of face images and decide whether the images were the same or different people with either no mask, one image in a mask, or one image in sunglasses. And accuracy on that task with masks on was around 90%, which was just a few percentage lower than when there was no mask on and the same as when people were in sunglasses.
So scientifically, you have no excuse for not recognising your best mate in the
supermarket. Scientifically, there's very little bit of an excuse. And I think we do direct in our day-to-day lives, though, we do still manage to recognise a lot of people in masks. Sometimes it's a bit harder, and we tend to remember the times when it is hard to recognise somebody. And it's easy to overlook those times that we go to the supermarket and easily recognise somebody that we know.
How many faces can we store in our brain?
That's a really good question, and it's not something that I've looked at directly, but other researchers in the UK looked at this previously, and they found that we can have about 5,000 familiar faces.
Wow. Because I live in Dublin. Dublin's a small enough city. I went to college in Dublin, how many years ago? God, like a long time ago, 40 years ago. I'm still seeing faces, you know, that are now 40 years older, but I still recognise them from the campus. I don't know these people, but I still recognise them as people who went to the same college as I did.
That links to something else that we're really interested in, well, is to do with whether or not people are super recognizers.
It
might be that you're really very good at recognizing faces if you find that you're able to recognize those faces for a really long period of time.
Ah,
so familiar faces,
Go on.
Most people are good at the task. But for unfamiliar faces, some people seem to be naturally better at the task than others.
So a super recognizer.
Yeah, that's what we call them. It's not the best name. It makes them sound a bit like superheroes. We don't really like that term.
How would you measure if you're a super recognizer or not?
Exactly. So a super recognizer is just somebody who it seems to be naturally good at recognizing faces. On these tasks that we give them on face recognition ability, they seem to perform in around the top 2%.
Right. There's always, you can push that as well a bit, particularly in airports, where you imagine you see famous people. You imagine you know somebody. That's another thing, another day's work. There's a thing called, I better get the pronunciation right, is it pareidolia?
Face pareidolia, where we see faces where faces don't even exist.
Yeah, like in Toast.
So often when we'd see faces in clouds or in toast, yeah, or in fruits. So that just, I think, leads back to that fact that humans are so attuned to finding faces that we do see them even when they don't exist.
So we want to see a face in something. That's the way the brain works.
I think maybe we want to see faces, and faces are so important to us, and we're such social creatures, that our brain is highly adapt to finding faces and helping us remember those familiar faces. And then for super recognizers, we don't know quite what they're doing that makes them better at unfamiliar faces.
Yeah.
But they were better even at the masked face comparison, which is something that hadn't been looked at before. So we didn't know if their ability was just for faces that were unconcealed.
And do you know anything about emotions and mask wearing?
Good question. That was also something we looked at in the study, as people have said kind of anecdotally, when I'm out in the shop, people can't tell if I'm smiling at them anymore. The results for that were kind of as expected, in that where the bottom part of the face is really important for displaying an emotion, that would reduce the accuracy on recognizing that emotion. So, for example, a happy face really uses the smile. You don't need the eyes as much. So when you cover the lower part of the face, that makes it much harder to recognize a happy face.
I thought that we smiled with our eyes.
That's something that's been quite interesting in our research, is that it does seem that the lower portion of the face seems to be important for a lot of emotions and for identification, perhaps more than was really understood previously.
Because, you know, that experiment they did where they had somebody doing a forced smile and then somebody doing a genuine smile, and the eyes and the crow's feet seemingly give it away that you're really smiling, because the crow's feet around the eyes sort of scrunch up when there's a genuine smile, as opposed to a fake one. Is that all? Is that all BS?
There's a lot of research. So my research is mostly in identity perception.
Right.
But when we looked at the emotions in this research, we didn't look at genuine and non-genuine smiles. Is that's all another line of research, but it's all very interesting. But in our line of work, we found that certain emotions were really impaired by
wearing a mask,
which shows it's not all in the eyes after all.
Are we moving into a world where facial recognition will be available in, you know, very cheap technology?
It's hard to know what's going to happen. So this study that we focused on in terms of masks and face recognition looked at the human ability and really focused on that sort of a remarkable human ability to recognise people, even when their appearance can look very different. And that's something that's really impressive about humans, is that they learn the different ways that the people that they know, they learn the different ways that their faces can vary. So how the face looks across different expressions, when they're happy, when they're sad, even if they've had a new haircut, and you seem to learn and store all that variability. So human face recognition is remarkably good for familiar faces.
Computer algorithms are
getting better and better all the time. But that's something that we didn't look at directly in the study. Whether they'll be available everywhere, it's hard to know. They're definitely becoming available in more places, but there's lots of important ethical questions as well as accuracy questions to consider.
And do you know the brain, do we fill in the gaps for everybody, or is it on individuals? So does our brain have a way of going generally how a haircut affects how an individual works? Or do we have to see the person over time, an individual?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I was warned that you had a psychology degree, so I might get some good questions here on how we learn faces. So what we think is happening when we're becoming familiar with a face is, for each person that we know, we build up a representation of them.
Right.
So for each person you know, you start to learn how does that face look across different conditions. Mm. And then you can store that together into a representation. So you've got kind of like a bubble of how you'd expect that person to look.
Yeah.
And as long as next time you see them, their face falls within that expected bubble of how they should look, then you would recognize them. And you also need to learn how that face looks different to the other faces you know, so that you don't confuse people for being the same person.
Of course.
So we think you do that person by person, which explains why recognition is so much better for the faces that you have most experience with. The ones you've experienced with, that bubble for that person is really nicely populated. You know exactly how that face should look in different conditions. And again, that links with the masks. And if you put a mask over a familiar face, your representation seems to be strong enough that you can perhaps fill in the gaps with your knowledge that you have of the face. Or maybe you've seen that face with just the upper portion before and you can still recognize it.
I love this
Whereas
stuff.
Whereas for unfamiliar faces, and this is what the passport control officers have to deal with all the time, they're just comparing a face in front of them with a face on a passport, and they've got very little information there to know how that face can vary. So it's a much more difficult task.
So their bubbles aren't populated with anything.
Exactly. So there's nothing there. You don't know how much variation should you accept or how much could it look like another person.
Okay. And on names then, do we attach a name to that bubble or where does that come in?
So names come a bit later in the process. So you've probably had the experience where you see someone, you're like, I know that person. Mm. I hope they don't speak to me in the way that I need to know their name because I just cannot remember their name right now. I don't need to introduce them to anyone else. That later process of the name generation is a later step of the recognition process.
Right, okay.
So you recognize the face first. You can even sometimes work out how you know the face. Mm. And then the name is the very last thing to come.
Okay. That's mad. I wear a mask constantly at work and I've been working with a new colleague for the past 3 weeks. Yesterday, for the first time, our tea break coincided. When she took off her mask, I couldn't believe it was the same person. I had a different image in my mind completely. So what they've done is they've completed the face but got it wrong.
And that's fascinating. So that's the opposite.
Yes. So here we've loads of them here. Just my aunt is really, really bad at recognizing faces, not with masks, just all the time that she does know. She always mortified when she doesn't recognize people and calls it face Alzheimer's. Is there a term for this? Isn't there a condition where you don't recognize faces at all?
There is. There's a term called prosopagnosia,
right,
which is referred to as face blindness. It's when people can't recognize faces. And some people are born with prosopagnosia, so that's developmental prosopagnosia. And some people acquire prosopagnosia, often as a result of a brain injury.
And is that on a continuum?
Spectrum.
Is that on a Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
We think at the moment, there's still research going on this, but we think it's probably a continuum between prosopagnosia at the extreme poor end of the spectrum and super recognizers at the extreme high end. But when I talk about prosopagnosia being at the bottom end there, that would be developmental prosopagnosia. So your natural ability being low, or super recognizers being your natural ability being high.
Right. Okay.
So if any of your listeners do want to test their own face recognition ability, there is a website that one of my collaborators on this project has that you can see how good you are at face recognition, which is www.superrecognizers.com.
Oh, there you go. I'm straight on that after show, superrecognizers.com. The face ID on my iPhone is useless with a mask on. Any idea on getting around this? That's the technology. I met someone I hadn't seen for years in a supermarket last year. It was at the start of people wearing masks. And she recognised me. She said it was my eyes she recognised, says Mary. And picking a predator in the hedge growth was the reason for picking out faces, says that person on evolution. It's not just the mask. Everyone's hair is different also because we don't have the barbers and the hairdressers. And it's the longer...
That's a good point, that one. There'll be a lot of hairstyles that make that extra variability. So that might make someone fall out with that bubble that you'd usually have seen them in.
Yes, so you have a mask and longer hair and bad roots and everything else that's going on.
Exactly. It gets harder and harder when we add everything together.
It's fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. Ailey Noyes, a senior lecturer in cognitive psychology at the University of Huddersfield. Thanks, Ailey. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.